Question: nature, spirituality, and Christianity, are they compatible? Is one that you're interested in thinking about and talking over. I'm Mark Schwain, the teaching staff coordinator for this summer. And we have a couple of folks here, as I indicated at dinner, who will open up the subject briefly, they promised. Scott Hasserud, whom all of you know, and Mark Olson, whom most of you know. Mark is the Wilderness Spirituality Coordinator for the summer. So I think we might begin by just asking Scott first to share with us some of the concerns and questions and perhaps some correspondence and communications that you have received over the course of the last few months on this question.
Okay, thanks. One of the major struggles, I think, within the Christian faith community is the struggle between what I might call spirit on the one hand and nature on the other. In my observation, there has someplace along the line, there became a great rift between the two, a great split, a great chasm, with spirit and spiritual things being conceived as kind of one kind of reality, and nature and natural things another kind of reality. And we've had a hard time as a Christian community seeing how the two can be woven together. And that is reflected in my experience here at Holden Village in our discussions and in the reactions that we get from people to those discussions. I thought we had an absolutely wonderful Vespers tonight. I was thrilled by it. And of course, I have a strong investment in it, knowing the people and knowing something about their journeys and so forth. And so it was so thrilling for me to be part of that. But perhaps if you came new to the village, you might ask the question, where was Jesus in that? Or where was God in that? One of the ways in which this struggle within the Christian community to understand how we weave those two things together came up, and so was last fall. We had a conference for clergy here called Light, Lutherans in Theological Education.
Lutheran Institute of Theological Education.
Yeah, right. And in fact, Elizabeth Bettenhausen was one of our speakers for that occasion, along with Douglas John Hall and the Peter Steinke. Man, it was a wonderful conference. I think the best that we've had since I've been at Holden Village. Anyway, one morning at Matins, our community does Matins, and one of our community members at that time, young woman who struggling to, in her own journey, to piece together these issues of how spirit and nature fit together for her, chose simply without much comment to offer up a reading. And what I'd like to do tonight to illustrate this struggle is first I want to read you the reading, and then I want to read you a letter that I received from one of the clergy in attendance at the conference. The reading was by Bird Baylor, and it's titled The Way to Start a Day. The way to start a day is this: go outside and face the east and greet the sun. With some kind of blessing or chant or song, that you make yourself and keep for early morning. The way to make the song is this. Don't try to think what words to use until you're standing there alone. When you feel the sun, you'll feel the song too. Just sing it. But don't think you're the only one who ever worked that magic. Your caveman brothers knew what to do. Your cave woman sisters knew too. They sang to help the sun come up and lifted their hands to its power. A morning needs to be sung too. A new day needs to be honored. People have always known that. Didn't they chant at dawn in the sun temples of Peru and leap and sway to Aztec flutes in Mexico and drum sunrise songs in the Congo and ring 1,000 small gold bells in China? Didn't the pharaohs of Egypt say the only sound at dawn should be the sound of songs that please the morning sun? They knew what songs to sing. People always seemed to know. And everywhere, they knew what gifts the sun wanted. In some places they gave gold, in some places they gave flowers, in some places sacred smoke blown to the four directions, in some places feathers and good thoughts, some places fire, but everywhere they knew to give something. And everywhere they knew to turn their faces eastward as the sun came up. Some people still know. When the first pale streak of light cuts through the darkness, wherever they are, those people make offerings and send mysterious, strong songs to the sun. They know exactly how to start a day. Their blessings float on the wind over Pueblo cornfields. In New Mexico, and you hear their morning songs in villages in Africa. And they salute the sunrise ceremonially in the high, cold mountains of Peru. Today, long before dawn, they were already waiting in Japan with prayers, and they were gathered at little shrines in India with marigolds in their hands. They were bathed in the sacred Ganges River as the sun came up, and high on a mesa in Arizona, and they were holding a baby toward the sun. They were speaking the child's new name so the sun would hear and know that child. It had to be sunrise, and it had to be that first sudden moment. That's when all the power of life is in the sky. Some people say there is a new sun every day, that it begins its life at dawn and lives only for one day. They say you have to welcome it. You have to make the sun happy. You have to make a good day for it, and you have to make a good world for it to live its one day life in. And the way to start, they say, is just by looking east at dawn. When they look east tomorrow, you can too. Your song will be an offering, and you'll be one more person in one more place, and one more time in the world saying hello to the sun, letting it know you are there. If the sky turns a colored sky never was before, just watch it. That's part of the magic. That's the way to start a day. And in response to that reading, Dear Scott, I attended the recent Light Conference at Holden. It was delightful. The village staff served us well. One morning, devotion by a staff person was totally out of place in the Christian content of worship. It was on worship, yes, but it was on sun worship. When the leader began, I thought this would be something about the sun as a gift of God that warms the earth and its beauty which warms our spirit, and then lead into the Son of God, Jesus. It didn't. It was purely sun worship. That is pagan, not Christian, and does not belong in this setting. A couple of years ago, I spent 5 days at Holden in January. Similar such events happened in the context of worship. I talked to the interim director at that time. This practice is apparently continuing. I hope it will cease.
Okay, I think that opens the issue up fairly well. But I want to hear from Mark first before we open it up for conversation with everyone.
I'll be brief, very brief. Not that you weren't, Scott. As a matter of fact, used that reading. I recognize that reading. I've used it before in my program. And the question we're faced with is nature spirituality and Christian spirituality? Or was it Christianity?
Christianity.
Christianity. And are they compatible? I think the question I ask myself is, how do you define Christianity and how do you define nature spirituality? If you define Christianity as what the man Jesus was about, then Christianity and nature spirituality are compatible. That is, if you look at Christianity as a Christ-based spirituality, which means an incarnated God, then incarnation works with nature spirituality. But if you look at Christianity as a religion or a spirituality with the man Jesus at its center, then of course anything else is heresy. And they aren't compatible. That's how I would open our discussion.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so we've heard an actual episode that took place, which I think helps to focus what's behind the kind of question we've raised for your consideration. And then Mark has invited us to, along the way, think further about clarifying the terms in the question, Christianity and nature spirituality. So the floor is open now. I'm simply going to moderate and try to keep things focused and people talking not past one another, but with one another. So the floor is open. Is Christianity compatible with nature spirituality?
What is nature spirituality?
Everybody hear that? What is nature spirituality? Does anybody want to take a crack at least formulating a preliminary definition, or don't want to put you on the spot here, Mark, but
that's a heck of a good question.
Wilderness. You're the coordinator of wilderness spirituality.
Uh-huh. Nature spirituality, I think a lot is lumped into that term. A Native American spirituality would be considered nature spirituality by some. A lot of the current New Age philosophies and spiritualities would be considered nature spirituality. And I think anything that looked at the natural world or symbols in the natural world as sacred would be considered nature spirituality. Wilderness spirituality, which is what I'm supposedly about this summer and last summer, for me is finding a relationship with God through and with the creation. How's that? That's hard.
Okay, let's just say, for the sake of, let me see if this is fair to what you said, and slightly more succinct. Let's just start with the notion that nature spirituality is the view that nature is sacred, and thus a source of human spiritual renewal and insight. Nature is sacred, and thus a source of human spiritual renewal and insight. Let's just kind of start with that.
I'm just thinking of a young man that came to our church and works among the Navajo Indians in Arizona. And when you were talking about that, and when he came and spoke to our church, you know, I think the difference is that when we know Christ, we are supposed to change. If we worship something other than what Christ is and teaches, when he talked about the Indians, they are still violent. They still get drunk. They still do terrible things. You can see that their beliefs about nature don't seem to change their personality. As Christians, we see that in a different... To me, it doesn't seem to mesh.
Ted, want to respond to
that? Yeah, I'd like to respond to that about your comments about the Native American culture. I don't know where to start. Just look at sort of modern capitalistic society and the oppression that we do to our, you know, the entire world. So your point about there's drunk and violent doesn't seem to make any sense to me. I don't see how that fits in with what... I understand what you're saying about distinction between worshiping Christ and worshiping objects in nature.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm having trouble with your linking violence and drunkenness in the Native American culture to spirituality, your use of that and while ignoring the violence that's in our culture.
Oh, well,
Christian culture.
I understand that. We call ourselves a Christian nation, and okay. Are we?
Well, but you seem to single out Native Americans in that way.
Well, I'm just speaking because he came and talked to us, and it just kind of, when you said that about the difference between... it's wonderful what God has made in this world for us to enjoy, but still knowing Christ should change our nature. You know, I mean, you don't get that if you worship nature.
So if only Native American culture then would become Christian, then it would somehow change their violence and drunkenness?
Hopefully.
Okay, Rick, you had a comment.
One thing that comes to mind in this discussion is that I think we need to ask for ourselves a little broader question, that is just, what is spirituality? And I bring that up because in contemporary Christianity, the spiritual or spirituality side of our Christian experience is often ignored or not discussed openly. We tend to intellectualize and deal with things kind of on a rational level, not on a spiritual level. So many people don't have any kind of spiritual experience or don't sense that other people have the same spiritual experience they have. And in that light, some other types of spirituality become intriguing because there's a way that we can experience what we may not experience in our Christian existence.
Okay.
So,
yes.
I think it's important to differentiate also worshiping the idea of worship, worshiping something in nature and using symbols from nature for worship. What pops immediately to mind is a common symbol for Christ in the early church, which was a fish. To say that, now that symbol then is, as we understand it, is a symbol for Christ, is something that conveys meaning to us, is an interpretation for Christ and for what he was for us. But we don't necessarily worship fish because we use this symbol. I think that's an important differentiation in nature spirituality and Christianity as well, where admiring the sun does not necessarily constitute sun worship, but may serve as a focus by which we understand more completely the nature of God, the nature of Christ.
Okay, so I take it that what you just said, back there, you would sympathize with that view, right? What you were disturbed about was the notion of nature as itself sacred and worshiping directly a natural object of one sort or another, and that's what you're introducing, some notion that nature is construed as a symbol, et cetera, then you're comfortable with the kind of reading that we had here. But if it's we're worshiping directly the sun, then you would be, and I think you would be, uncomfortable. Am I right? Mark, go ahead.
Allow me to probe this a little bit further and bounce some ideas off this. There was must have been a romantic poet, or a pre-romantic poet, who wrote something to the effect of everything in nature is in imitation of the crucifixion. And from that, I understand how we can use a symbol from nature to deepen our worship experience, but also to be reminded that before there was Christ, the trees were practicing resurrection. The symbols, if you want to call them symbols, were around before Christianity came into being. And thus, they themselves have deeper meaning and deserve more respect than to apply them to a 2,000-year-old religion.
Oh, yes, right here in the front. And then there's somebody back here. Okay, first you and then back here.
I think we're trying to separate two things that should not be separated. I think the basic thing is that we worship Christ, and the Bible says that the world was made by God, and we were to be stewards of that world. And to me, that's the nature comes secondary. It's a question of setting your priorities. You worship Christ, and then you're a good steward of everything in creation. And it seems to me like here you do a pretty good job of it. I mean, I just what little I've seen around. But I don't think we can set worshiping nature ahead of worshiping Christ.
Yeah. Yes, Mr.
I'm not sure I can verbalize what I want to say, but I would submit that the same problems that people have in the nature orientation of spirituality exists in Christianity. People come by way of self-centeredness in either way, in either of these, and we're on that journey to find ourselves. And if we travel through, we don't need to have this dualism. We're starting to kind of create a dualism that one side of us is spiritual, and that leads us to be better people. The whole bit of nature of which we are a part seems to me that we have to find our way through that maze and understand ourselves in that. When we go off and rationalize that this is the way to get there for us, we spend a lot of time doing that, and we set up the rituals, the sun worship, or for that matter, we do almost the same thing in Christianity at times where we get so pious that we forget about the world around us, and we don't have compassion, and we do all the things that are violent. We have it happen all around us, and that's why the forgiveness proposition is there, and I'm sure that's existing everywhere. I don't know if that verbalizes quite what I want to say, but I think there's a danger that we are falling into the trap of dualism as we try to separate these things out. As to say, we've got the right answer, there are no other answers. As we sat here through the parables, it keeps exploding our assumptions. And I think that's been one of the most valuable for pieces of information that I've come by in a long time.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
I think in studying the parables, we've had a good example of Jesus using nature for to teach us. I mean, just the parable talking about the sower and the money. Just look at all of Jesus' parables.
I was giving some thought to this afternoon, and as a level one biblical scholar, I was thinking about Adam and Eve, that story, and what it says, and because I was thinking about creation at the beginning of the Jewish-Christian era, and how we define that. And I got to, thinking and reminding myself again that the problem with Adam and Eve, or the so-called fall, really was not a fall downward, it was a fall upward, as an author puts it. That they were not satisfied in being part of the creation and the creative order. They wanted to be like God, and they wanted to be above it. And so when they sinned by not falling down into being less than human. Actually, they did, but I mean, what I'm saying is that their temptation was to try to be like God, and therefore became less than what they were intended to be. And I think about a professor of mine that taught me Luther's explanation of all of this stuff. And I remember very strongly coming out of that class, just shivering with delight over the realization that I am a part of creation and inseparable from all the created order. And I would like to think of myself as better than, or whatever, but I'm not. That's what God's intended me to be. And when I think about nature spirituality or my Christianity, boy, a lot of my spirituality comes from the fact that I am a part of that order. And I'm always going to be a part of that order. I'm still not going to go to heaven and be a God. That's not part of my faith. I'm still going to be God's creation forever. And therefore, I have a relationship with all that's around me, up here in these mountains, as well as in my backyard, which we intend to keep as God-like as possible. I'm scared when I see us trying to, as Christians, trying to fall upward again and become above creation and look down on it, when we are a part of it.
So that returns us to the metaphor that we had displayed very tangibly this evening with the web. Being a part of the web of nature and finding one's self and one's spirit there in that kind of interconnectedness. Where?
Jim.
Oh, Jim.
Well, did I put my hand up?
I was just told that you did. I hadn't seen it.
Well, these are kind of unformulated thoughts. I guess the title of the session, Are Christianity and Nature Spiritually Compatible? We are stick with the title, obviously. I don't think we should, because that sounds too abstract somehow. And I can see myself, dumb as myself, teaching Genesis, going through and making comparisons between monotheism and pagan religions and so on. And I can see things in other religions that I admire, and I can see things I miss. In my own tradition. And I think the question may be more what Christianity and maybe just Lutheranism, which is where I'm worshiping at present, but what Christianity needs now. Not in the abstract for the differences, but what is needed. And one of my favorite authors, Jean Sullivan, who I've been quoting this week, talks about Europe and England and the United States as the third world of spirituality. And the so-called third world is the spiritual part of the world right now. And so I think, coming back to Mark's definition as something that Rick also said, it's not a question of compatibility so much as the need for spiritual insight and renewal from some other traditions. And I can see how that prayer, poem, whatever it is, would have offended that man because of its, not just because of its use of nature, but its invocation of all those other religious traditions which are not ours. And that's, there are two places we're looking for insight then, from other traditions' uses of nature and from our own experiences of nature. And I think both of those things need both to be lifted up in our Christianity right now. We have not been open to those other traditions. And for me, it's a matter of complementarity at various points in order to enrich the tradition that we have so that we're not destroying the earth. Put our good ethical traditions together with some respect for the earth and the people and the creatures that live here.
Thank you.
Okay.
Seems to me we've got a couple of things going here. Some who have shared their ideas, thoughts, feelings with us have suggested that they're about the notion of worshiping nature as opposed to worshiping the creator. And so there's a kind of an uneasiness there, which I think goes back to the dualism that Scott started with by saying that it was a problem always for him to sort through the relationship, and it had been for Christianity, between, as he put it, nature and spirit. I think others have offered certain views which aren't so much disagreeing with those who feel this kind of tension, but who say, if you examine, I think this gentleman here got to it, if you go beyond dualism, in a way behind it, and just reflect on experience and the kind of new world that's created by looking at a parable and thinking about a way of art and so forth. Just look at experience, you find located there that this kind of dualism, nature-spirit, just doesn't make much sense at an experiential level. Yes, you can look up at the beautiful wilderness here and you can see it as something natural, but who's to deny the feeling level that one feels stirred in a especially profound way? I think many of us do, otherwise we wouldn't, I shouldn't say otherwise we wouldn't be here, there are other reasons to be here, but certainly one important reason why we're here. And so I think this goes back to something you're bringing up as well, suggesting that Christianity is hardly a static abstraction, but it itself is a historical phenomenon that right now, for its own growth, needs fructification from other traditions and from other sources of spirituality and so forth. So it seems that's where I hear the conversation going, is an effort for us to grope about to find ways in which we don't have to get stuck in a kind of dualism, which in a way the question tonight invited us to do. Mm-hmm. Is this compatible with that? And so I think we're beginning to grope now to find ways of constructively moving beyond the kind of dualism that maybe the question as it's formulated invites. So let's kind of help each other out in doing that with some more offerings and insights. Yes, Jeannie.
I think I'm probably very simplistic in the way I look at some of these things, but from my ancient age, I look back at the way I was brought up. First as a baptized Lutheran and growing up in a congregational church, going to a Methodist university and having a lot of Jewish friends and marrying a Catholic. I come from such a strange background. But several things that seem very apparent to me, that if I am a Christian, and I think that I am, I believe in a triune God. I have been brought up to believe in an omnipresent God, the divinity of the Son, Jesus Christ, and the Holy Spirit. And that's the way I will probably worship to the end of my days. I hope I do. In the last 20 years, I have worked with a nationally known Native American out of Oklahoma who has been very well received throughout the churches and in one particular denomination where I work. And yet, during the past year, when he was invited into a church, and I believe in the Sunday church, and I think that the church is terribly important to this country. I hate to see the decline of the major denominations that have been a great strength in the development of our country. And I like Sunday worship in the church. And my family has spent the last 40 years in this area. And so we would go to church in the morning with our children, have Sunday dinner in the oven, and come back, and maybe we'd take that somewhere in a picnic after church. And we would enjoy, you know, whether it was fishing or hiking or whatever we did outdoors. We loved the outdoors, but we did not worship Mother Earth or deify anything. And I'm a literature, I don't have any literature teacher. I spent 40 years in classrooms, so I've been acquainted with a lot of that nature literature. But when this particular Native American was invited into a church and did his worship service as he would as a Native American, the pastor was deeply wounded. And he asked for a year's sabbatical to think about what had happened in his church, because he could not reconcile the way he had been conducting his services and the way he had been ordained. He could not reconcile that with what the worship service that this Native American led. And I respect both of those people. And it hurt me because I could see that it's almost irreconcilable. And I hope that you can tell me how, in what way, I could help save two wounded people that I really care about. I'd like to see them understand each other. I don't know how to do it. So you're bringing up a very poignant subject tonight, and worthy of a forum discussion. And I respect the people whose intellects I've come in contact with this week. I'd love to hear not any one of us monopolizing this forum, but to hear from almost everybody. Someone, I think in every corner of this room, has some thoughts on this subject I'd like to hear.
Yes.
My perception of what nature spirituality is recognizing the life-giving force in everything that is able to give life. I think the word that's tripping us up is the word worship, that we're worshiping the sun, that we're worshiping the trees. And I don't see it as that. I see it as recognizing the life that the sun provides for us, that God created, the life that the earth gives us in the grains, the bread that we eat. And I see Jesus using the words, I am the light, I am the bread of life. We eat those things, we are given life. And I think it just seems that we're struggling with the word worship rather than just saying, I recognize the power, the life that is in the nature, in the world around us. And maybe that would help us not be so uneasy with recognizing that nature has these beautiful gifts for us.
Yes.
One could hardly fail to appreciate what this area has. Walking through the woods yesterday, I noticed just the variety of life. And my own mind expanded on that. And so we can't come in contact with nature and fail to appreciate it. But at the same time, I realize that nature can turn on us. Lightning could strike and fire could start and obliterate whole village and maybe many lives. I could meet a bear on the path or a rattlesnake. Nature has that side too, and we better not forget it. There's life and there's death. But I remember something else too, and that is God didn't simply create nature and forget it. But God is creating in this world and creates nature. And it seems to me that if we turn to worship, we are acknowledging the supreme reality. And if nature is that supreme reality, we're definitely worshiping a creature rather than the creator. Our view of God isn't big enough. Our view of the world isn't big enough. And that's why I agree very much with the person who wrote to to hold, and you're asking what was going on. I appreciate as maybe poetry, or as a view, or as an interesting thing, the piece that someone had used that morning for Matins. I can appreciate some of the feelings behind it, but no mistaking, that's a worship of a creative thing rather than a worship of the Creator. I think we need a little straightening out in our thinking. And I hope that as Christians, we don't have to look elsewhere for some clarity, but we can look within our own tradition, our own faith. We've let it sit. We haven't exploited the riches that we have in Christian faith about the creation, about nature. I think we fail to listen, and so we're at sea. We don't know what we're looking for anymore, and so we take here, take there, take there, as if there was no other place to get it.
Yes, Jeff.
Yeah, I think we, you know, with what you said, I think we're still focusing very much on the notion of worship. And that's not my understanding of nature, spirituality, at least as it's practiced by all of the Christians that I know. Now, you know, certainly you can find examples of what might be called nature worship in, you know, in various ways, and New Age movements or whatever. But nature spirituality, it seems to me, as Christians practice it, is expecting to experience the divine presence by various means in the world. And that's a thoroughly Christian and a thoroughly Lutheran concept. I mean, that comes from our tradition. Expecting to find the divine presence in our world. We find it in each other, don't we? We say that all the time. We find it in the bread and the wine. Our view is a sacramental view. And if we want to really pull out the Lutheran tradition, we could use that Latin phrase that Elizabeth would probably hit me for using, finitum capax est infiniti, right? The finite, that is, that which is in our world, is capable of receiving the infinite. And that's the basis of the sacraments. And it comes from the Incarnation. You know, that body, that human body, which is finite, which was born and died of the man Jesus, was capable of receiving the infinite and the bread and the wine. And so, by extension, we say, well, you know, we experience God's presence in each other. We can look to the mountains and experience God's presence, and so forth. So, to me, that's sort of the origin of nature spirituality. A thoroughly Christian, even Lutheran, view of the created world as permeated with the presence of God. As you said, you know, every day, God is always the creator, not just at the beginning, but right this very moment, in these mountains, in this room. And thus to expect that, and to look for it, and to respond to it, to me doesn't set up any kind of incompatibility with Christian faith. But, you know, Christ is God. The triune God is the creator. So we don't have to say nature is over here and Christ is over here, but God is present through nature as through all aspects of creation.
And you said extension of God. That's a wonderful way to put it.
Elizabeth.
Why would I get you?
I don't know. We were talking the other night about not using all this old theological stuff.
That happens to be one of the things I still thoroughly believe out of Lutheranism. I said this afternoon that it is no more self-evident to me that God is present in the Eucharist than that God is present in vaginas, to make this point most bluntly. And that's Luther. That's Luther. And Luther was right on that point. I think where I differ from anything I've heard this evening is that I'm not so sure what some of you seem to be so sure about when you talk about worshiping God. I know the language. I was raised in the language. I studied it all the way through. But what does it mean when we say that we worship God? And I don't mean the catechism language. And if we set that aside, what are we saying when we say that we will worship the Creator but not the creature? Is that a mental separation that we're drawing? Or is that an emotional state? Is it a spiritual condition that enables us to say, well, at this moment, it's the Creator that I'm worshiping but not the creature? And even more complicated than that, I'm not sure what it means to say that God is Creator. I can recite the Creed, I can recite both Luther and Heidelberg, but I'm not so sure what we really mean anymore. And I often start with the abortion issue on this, where we say God creates every life. Well, specifically, what are we saying here? And if we're saying that we have access to a supreme power of the universe, which differs from every other religious tradition on planet Earth, then I can no longer accept that understanding of worshiping a creator, because I know deep experientially that nothing is so separate from anything else on the planet. So if we're so worried about keeping Christianity the exclusive way to truth, to the exclusion of every other religion, and I think it goes back to this congregation and the pastor and the Native American guest. Part of the problem there was that you can't have two paths to the truth. They conflict. And that's dualism again. If you start with the wrong assumption, you get the wrong conclusion. And I think Christianity can no longer claim that we're the only ones who know God rightly. It just ain't true. And the problem is that we think, well, then we must be wrong, because then we're still thinking dualistically. Mm-hmm. Everything's either or. Well, I just don't think the world operates that way. And that means that I'm not so confident that God is all that interested in us getting up and saying, I'm worshiping the S-O-N and not the S-U-N. To me, that's reducing God. It's that to have God too small is to keep the old language in a way that makes us closed in people.
Well, may I ask Elizabeth a question, please? I mean, this is something where I am ignorant. I have not studied basically all the religions of the world, but don't the majority of them believe that there is a God, no matter what they call that God? That there is a God of creation? No?
I would guess, and there are others here more expert than I who can do something other than guess. Every human being has some understanding of the holy. Okay. Not necessarily of a God.
Not necessarily a creator. I guess that there was the fundamental difference between this Native American and the pastor. The Native American was not naming any God of creation, I guess, and that was the thing that was bothering him. As much as anything, he was not referring to any creator and a God, or whatever you would call the creator.
Ted, you had a response, I think.
Well, I just think that, like Pam said, how we're focusing so much on worship, I think another thing we tend to do is we focus on, Elizabeth just said it, win-lose models, which seems to be a common Western thing to do. Either it's all God or it's all nature, and there's no compromise or meshing that can go on that works. So just to say, I think we can look at other models of figuring out how to make this compatible, because I think your point.
Yes. Right. Stop.
Well, an issue for me is that I think one of our struggles within the Christian faith community is that we have largely had what I call an unembodied spirituality. And I think that's a major issue for us. I think God has largely become an intellectual abstraction. And therefore, for those who journey now and are compelled, for whatever reason, inwardly, to embody their spirituality, I mean, and embody it in things that can be experienced and known, I mean, this was my crisis in seminary 30 years ago now, can no longer live in a tradition where the Creator, where God, where that which we name as Christ, where even Jesus is unembodied anymore. And that basically was the tradition I grew up in. You know, to be a good Lutheran theologian, you have to publish at least 59 volumes and read them. and for me, that just became an illusion. I mean, I couldn't at times. I mean, I would lose it. I would literally lose it. I mean, I couldn't relate it to, you know, these stones and my relationships and me. And I think part of the appeal of nature is that we experience somehow a lot. Folks, including myself, experience the Creator, and therefore resist any notion that might suggest that one could deal with the Creator without dealing with nature. That it's impossible for me anymore to talk about God without talking about things like nature or Mark. Or our relationship, or something. I mean, something that embodies. I don't know how to do that anymore. I mean, maybe somebody could help me understand how to talk about, or even think about, or even believe in a God that cannot be experienced, that is not embodied in some way. And I think it gets crazy when we start thinking we can do that. You know, we can talk about God or believe in God or worship God without relating it to the realities that we all live in and in between and in the midst of and so on and so forth.
Okay. I think that is what I'm going to accept as the last word of the forum. It's 10 o'clock. That's the main reason.